Hi again, David here. Welcome back to Manifesting Miracles Week, five-part series where I dive deep into A Course in Miracles. I can't believe we're already more than halfway through this powerful series. Again, if you missed the first three shows in the series, be sure to go back and give them a listen. You'll be glad you did. On today's episode, I dissect a few sections from the chapter titled The Separation and the Atonement, focusing on healing as a release from fear and the function of the miracle worker. We've got lots to cover, so let's get to it. Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. In A Course in Miracles, there is something called healing as a release from fear. And that's what I'm going to be going through in this lesson. Our emphasis now is now on healing. The miracle is the means of atonement. The miracle is the means, the atonement is the principle, and the healing is the result. To speak of a miracle of healing is to combine two orders of reality inappropriately. Healing is not a miracle. The atonement, or the final miracle, is a remedy, and any type of healing is a result. The kind of error to which atonement is applied is irrelevant. All healing is essentially the release from fear. So let's think of atonement for a moment. Atonement is to basically make a wrong right, you know, to atone for something that you have done that is incorrect. And what they're saying here is that all healing is essentially the release from fear. So that means that fear causes us to do things where we would be coming from our pain, our story, our paradigm. Now, to undertake this, you cannot be fearful yourself. You do not understand healing because of your own fear. A major step in the atonement plan is to undo error at all levels. Sickness, or not right-mindedness, is the result of a level of confusion because it always entails the belief that what is amiss on one level can adversely affect another. We have referred to miracles as the means of correcting levels of confusion, for all mistakes must be corrected at the level on which they occur. Only the mind is capable of error. Now think about that for a moment, okay? Only the mind is capable of error. Why? Because that's where everything starts. The body can act wrongly only when it is responding to misthought. The body cannot create, and the belief that it can, a fundamental error, produces all physical symptoms. Physical illness represents a belief in magic. The whole distortion that made magic rests on the belief that there is a creative ability in matter which the mind cannot control. This error can take two forms. It can be believed that the mind can miscreate in the body, or that the body can miscreate in the mind. When it is understood that the mind, the only level of creation, cannot create beyond itself, neither type of confusion need occur. Only the mind can create because spirit has already been created, and the body is a learning device for the mind. Learning devices are not lessons in themselves. Their purpose is merely to facilitate learning. The worst a faulty use of a learning device can do is to fail to facilitate learning. It has no power in itself to introduce actual learning errors. The body, if properly understood, shares the invulnerability of the atonement to two-edged application. This is not because the body is a miracle, but because it is not inherently open to misrepresentation. The body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. So You are a spiritual being in a body. You're not a body, you're in a body. However, it is almost impossible to deny the existence of this world. Those who do so are engaging in partially unworthy form of denial. The term unworthy here implies only that it is not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful. If one denies this unfortunate aspect of the mind's power, one is also denying the power of itself. All material means that you accept as remedies for the body ills are reinstatements of magic principles. This is the first step in believing that the body makes its own illness. It is the second misstep to attempt to heal it through non-creative agents. It does not follow, however, that the use of such agents for corrective purposes is evil. Sometimes the illness has a sufficiently strong hold over the mind to render a person temporarily inaccessible to the atonement. In this case, it may be wise to utilize a compromise approach to the mind and the body in which something from the outside is temporarily given healing belief. This is because the last thing that can help the non-right mind or the sick is an increase in fear. They are already in a fear-weakened state. If they are prematurely exposed to a miracle, they may be precipitated into panic. This is likely to occur when upside-down perception has induced the belief that miracles are frightening. The value of the atonement does not lie in the manner in which it is expressed. In fact, if it is used truly, it will inevitably be expressed in whatever way is most helpful to the receiver. This means that a miracle, to attain its full efficacy, must be expressed in a language that the recipient can understand without fear. This does not necessarily mean that this is the highest level of communication to which he is capable. However, it does mean how capable they are now. However, that is the highest level of communication to which they are capable at this moment. The whole aim of the miracle is to raise the level of communication, not to lower it by increasing fear. Now, when we're talking about miracles, we are not talking about magic. We are talking inside the laws of cause and effect. The cause being how we think, the effect being the experience. Before miracle workers are ready to undertake their function in this world, it is essential that they fully understand the fear of release. Otherwise, they may unwittingly foster the belief that release is imprisonment, a belief that is already very prevalent. The misconception arises in turn from the belief that harm can be limited to the body. That is because of the underlying fear that the mind can hurt itself. None of these errors is meaningful because the miscreations of the mind do not really exist. They're just phantoms of our imagination. This recognition is a far better protective device than any form of level of confusion because it introduces correction at the level of the error. It is essential to remember that only the mind can create and that correction belongs at the thought level only. To amplify the earlier statement, spirit is already perfect and therefore does not require correction. So that is very important for us to understand. Spirit is perfect and does not require correction. The body does not exist except as a learning device for the mind. In other words, when we're talking about the body, we're also talking about what the body does, what the body produces, what the body creates, the results and the circumstances and the environment that the body is in because of how we think. The body does not exist except as a learning device for the mind. This learning device is not subject to errors of its own because it cannot create. It is obvious then that inducing the mind to give up the miscreations is the only application of creative ability that is truly meaningful. Magic is the mindless or the miscreative use of the mind. Physical medications are forms of spells, but if you are afraid to use the mind to heal, you should not attempt to do so. The very fact that you are afraid makes your mind vulnerable to miscreation. You are therefore likely to misunderstand any healing that might occur, and because egocentricity and fear usually occur together, you may be unable to accept the real source of healing. Under these conditions, it's safer for you to rely temporarily on physical healing devices because you cannot misperceive them as your own creations. As long as your sense of vulnerability persists, you should not attempt to perform miracles. So the vulnerability that they're talking about here is, number one, the misunderstanding of the mind. Number two, the lack of willingness to accept responsibility for our own thinking, how we're thinking, the way we're thinking, and what it is that we're thinking about.
100%. The belief in the idea that we deserve to be successful, that we are basically, however you want to, so this gets a little tricky for some people, so I'm going to word it in a way where hopefully everybody can accept it. You're either a child of God, you're one with God, you're an extension of God, a branch of God, you are God, all of that. The idea is that coming from the Creator, whatever your view of the, whether it's the architect of the universe or whether it's Christ, Buddha, Allah, whatever your thing is, the idea is that we're one with that power. We have that creative ability. We have the ability to choose. We have the ability to manifest. We have the creative faculty. So that's what it is.
I have already said that miracles are expressions of miracle-mindedness. And miracle-mindedness means right-mindedness. The right mind neither exalt nor depreciate the mind of the miracle worker or the miracle receiver. However, as a correction, the miracle need not await the right-mindedness of the receiver. In fact, its purpose is to restore him to his right mind. So see, everything is about us moving towards the perfection of what we really are. Okay, when we are in thinking that is not right-mindedness, we're experiencing that in our life, and the idea is to restore us to right-mindedness, not to punish us, not to keep us in situations that are not productive, not for us to suffer, not for us to be sick, not for us to experience any of those things, but to bring us back to the truth, back to the atonement, back to the right-mindedness. It is essential, however, that the miracle worker be in his right mind, however briefly, or he will be unable to reestablish right-mindedness in someone else. So if you are a person that is actually working with other people on this and you're not in your right mind, then you don't, at least in that moment, you do not have the ability to communicate from right-mindedness from one person to another. The healer who relies on his own readiness is endangering his understanding. You're perfectly safe as long as you are completely unconcerned about your readiness. But maintain a consistent trust in mind. If your miracle-working inclinations are not functioning properly, it is always because fear has intruded on your right-mindedness and has literally turned it upside down. All forms of not right-mindedness are the result of refusal to accept the atonement for yourself. If you do accept it, you are in a position to recognize that those who need healing are simply those who have not realized the right-mindedness is healing. Okay? Let me say that again. If you do not accept it, you are in a position to recognize that those who need healing are simply those who have not realized that right-mindedness is healing. The sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. This means You recognize that mind is the only creative level and that its errors are healed by the atonement. Once you accept this, your mind can only heal. By denying your mind any destructive potential and reinstating its purely constructive powers, you place yourself in a position to undo the level of confusion of others. The message you then give them is the truth that their minds are similarly constructive and their miscreations cannot hurt them. By affirming this, you release the mind from over-evaluating its own learning device and restore the mind to its true position as the learner. It should be emphasized again, though, that the body does not learn any more than it creates. As a learning device, it merely follows the learner. But if it is falsely endowed with a self-initiative, it becomes a serious obstruction to the very learning that it should facilitate. Only the mind is capable of illumination. Spirit is already illuminated, and the body in itself is too dense. The mind, however, can bring its illumination to the body by recognizing that it is not the learner, and therefore unnameable to learning. The body is, however, easily brought into alignment with the mind that has learned to look beyond it toward the light, meaning the truth. Now, corrective learning always begins with the awakening of spirit. That is the understanding, the awareness that that's really what we are. That is also really what is flowing to and through us, and that is perfect in health, wealth, and prosperity. And the turning away from the belief in physical sight. This often entails fear, because you are afraid of what your spiritual sight will show you. I said before that the spirit cannot see error. It is capable only of looking beyond it to the defense of atonement. There is no doubt that this may produce discomfort, yet the discomfort is not the final outcome of the perception. When the spirit is permitted to look upon the defilement, basically at the altar, which is the mind, he also looks immediately toward the atonement. Nothing he perceives can induce fear, because you're just basking in truth at that point. Everything that results from spiritual awareness is merely channelized toward correction. Discomfort is aroused only to bring the need for correction into awareness. The fear of healing arises in the end from an unwillingness to accept unequivocally that healing is necessary. What the physical eye sees is not corrective, nor can error be corrected by any device that can be seen physically. As long as you believe in what your physical sight tells you, your attempts at correction will be misdirected. The real vision is obscured because you cannot endure to see your own defiled altar. But since the altar has been defiled, your state becomes doubly dangerous unless it is perceived. In other words, if you close the door on your own perception, you cannot see the misdirection of your own thinking, the miscreation of your own thinking, then the only thing that happens is the projection of responsibility and the projection of problems onto another. Healing is an ability that developed after the separation, before which it was unnecessary. Like all aspects of the belief in space and time, it's only temporary. However, as long as time persists, healing is needed as a means of protection. This is because healing rests on charity, and charity is a way of perceiving the perfection of another, even if you cannot perceive it in yourself. Most of the loftier concepts of which you're capable of now are time-dependent. Charity is really a weaker reflection of a much more powerful love encompassed that is far beyond any form of charity than you can conceive of as of yet. Charity is essential to right-mindedness in the limited sense in which it can now be attained. Charity is a way of looking at another as if he had already gone far beyond his actual accomplishments in time. Now I want you to think about that. Charity is a way of looking at another as if he had already gone far beyond his actual accomplishments in time. Since his own thinking is faulty, he cannot see the atonement for himself, or he would have no need for charity. The charity that is accorded him is both an acknowledgement that he needs help and a recognition that he will accept it. Both of these perceptions clearly imply their dependence on time, making it apparent that charity still lies within the limitations of this world. I said before that only revelation transcends time. The miracle, as an expression of charity, can only shorten it. It must be understood, however, that whenever you offer a miracle to another, you're shortening the suffering of both of you. This corrects retroactively as well as progressively. So here are the special principles of miracle workers. Number one, the miracle abolishes the need for lower order concerns. Since it is an out-of-pattern time interval, the ordinary considerations of time and space do not apply. When you perform a miracle, I will arrange both time and space to adjust to it. So the I part is spirit talking. Number two, a clear distinction between what is created and what is made is essential. All forms of healing rest on this fundamental correction in level perception. Number three, never confuse right and wrong mindedness. Responding to any form of error with anything except a desire to heal is an expression of this confusion. Now let me say that one more time. It's very important. Never confuse right and wrong mindedness. Never confuse them. Responding to any form of error with anything except a desire to heal is an expression of this confusion. It means judgment is in there at some level, and then healing can't take place on any level. Number four, the miracle is always a denial of this error and an affirmation of the truth. Only right-mindedness can correct in a way that has any real effect. Pragmatically, what has no real effect has no real existence. Its effect, then, is emptiness. Being without substantial content, it lends itself to projection. Number five, the level adjustment power of the miracle induces the right perception for healing. Until this has occurred, healing cannot be understood. Forgiveness is an empty gesture unless it entails correction. Without this, it is essentially judgmental rather than healing. And unfortunately, that's where most people come from. It's kind of like the idea of, I can forgive, but I can't forget. That is a judgment. Number six, miracle-minded forgiveness is only correction. It has no element of judgment at all. The statement, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, in no way evaluates what they do. It is an appeal to God to heal their minds. There is no reference to the outcome of the error, because that doesn't matter. Number seven, the injunction, be of one mind, is the statement for revelation readiness. My request, do this in remembrance of me, is the appeal for the cooperation from the miracle workers. The two statements are not in the same order of reality. Only the latter involves the awareness of time, since to remember is to recall the past in the present. Time is under my direction, meaning spirit, but timelessness belongs to God. It is time we exist for and with each other. In timelessness, all we do is coexist with God. Number eight, you can do much on behalf of your own healing and that of others if, in a situation calling for help, you think of it this way. I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do because he who sent me will direct me. I am content to be whatever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. I will be healed as I teach me to heal. Now, let me give you that one more time. I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent him who sent me. That is God and you being in your purpose of God. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do because he who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.